so well. He's sitting there looking at this class, blackboard here, and there's a student up there working a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says to us, "What's wrong with it?" I don't even understand it. He had his back to this thing, and he knew what is the problem.
Uh-huh.
See, you have to see it, but he didn't even have to see it. I don't know what the problem was. Even if it was explained, I probably didn't understand it.
Yeah.
But I still remember. Now, what's the problem with that? Well, how many students in your class?
In my class?
Yeah.
I've got 40.
Oh,
this is an introductory class.
Yeah.
And we want that many because purely in terms of mercenary reasons, that means I'm going to get probably 10 of them are going to declare a major. So we kind of get them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's also, I like the challenge of a bigger class.
Yeah.
They do a lot of writing, but then I pedagogically have to figure out how that's going to happen. And so what I do is I have them sign up for when their papers are due. They each have to write 3 5- to 10-page papers.
Mm.
But they choose when they're due, so in any given week, I never have more than 10 papers. But I always have to grade 10 papers in a week. But that way, I don't get 40 papers at once.
Yeah, yeah, that helps.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's 3 days a week, so one day is lecture. You know, here's the topic, here's how to think about it, here's ways to make sense. And then the next 2 days, I divide them up into groups of about 4 or 5, and I give them projects. And so one day will be, you go to the library and you work on this project. So just before, it's spring break right now. Last week, the project, we learned about different types of power in international relations. So we've done military power, economic power, and propaganda. So send them to the library, find an example of World War I propaganda, World War II propaganda, communist propaganda, and here's questions to ask about it, and then find something since 2000. And then on Friday, they present their findings.
God, that sounds interesting.
One of the people in the class is an Iraq war veteran.
He's what?
Is an Iraq war veteran. She was in Iraq in 2009, 2010.
Okay.
And she was in psychological operations. So her group, you know, they did the World War I, World War II communist. And then they played the awful hard rock music that they just play really, really loud when they're driving around in their Jeeps to drive people off the streets.
Hmm.
Because that way you can control the streets or safely get in and out or do these things. And so it was great. I mean, it was her experience. This is modern propaganda. It's designed to make people do something or think in a certain way. And then they, you know, there are pictures and things. So it's good fun.
Yeah, God, that sounds interesting. I would find that interesting. Many classes at Oregon, our class and I would go and usually lecture,
mm-hmm.
and I'd sit there, and every once in a while, the professor would say something, I'd write it down.
Right.
But if I boiled it all down, he could have done the whole thing in 10 minutes. You know?
Exactly.
At least for me.
Yeah.
And in other words, I wasn't that excited about it.
Yeah.
I did have something interesting. I didn't run into that before or hear about it since. I took math-related accounting.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't accounting. No, it wasn't accounting. Anyway, it was in that range.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was really, really behind.
Yeah.
So come in for our finals. and we had the room full of people who were doing our finals. At the fraternity, we have former final papers.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what the final is going to be.
Exactly.
So I struggled myself through, but the professor said, now look, you only have to answer what you want to answer, and you'll be graded on that answer. And that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When it was all said and done, what happened was that they row in front of me and the row in back of me was different than my exam.
Mm-hmm.
And the row in front of me and the row in back of me had the fraternity exam.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I barely, I mean, this is what you call a low D.
Yeah. But you know, as we say, they're still breathing.
There was a lot of grading on curve.
Yeah.
Our English teacher, English comp, he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
He graded on what you deserve to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was a pretty interesting man. And we write these weekly papers or whatever mm-hmm. they were. And he kept correcting me on my punctuation.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I went to see him. I said, look, I took English in Washington High School from a woman who wrote a book on punctuation. His answer was, you're in my class now. But he was kind enough to say, now look, once you leave my class, you can punctuate any way you want. And went on to explain there were some writers mm-hmm. known that hardly punctuate at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he said, when you're here, you're here.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Yeah, it's a tough thing when you're teaching, because I'm really a stickler for clarity in writing. You know, if you're going to do that, then you need a comma there.
Yeah.
You need to, you know, do these things. But in effect, you have to know the rules before you can break them.
Yeah.
And the students don't show any evidence that they know what the rules are. They're just sloppy. They're just not thinking about it. And so you get a good one.
Yeah.
You know, freshman year, someone like you who knows punctuation, who comes in, I'll see that and it's like, fantastic, you can fly. So we'll come up with different assignments for you. Great, go fly. But you it's a pretty high threshold to be able to do that.
We did one of those. You did yours, what you said, four or five major papers. He has to do one major paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be in before the last class.
Mm-hmm.
And for every day after, you get one way down.
You betcha.
And so, you know, students being as they are, I took that in. And almost, and incidentally, always alphabetical.
There you are.
So when he came to class, he said, okay.
You and Frank Roberts again.
Now he said, what subjects have you picked? Well, hell, I didn't even think about it until I sat down.
Yeah.
I said, and I don't know why, historical developments along the Willamette River, where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
Or but being a young man, I assumed when we left the room, I forgot that.
Yeah.
And I didn't forget that the time came up, and I said, God, I got to get going on this. And so I started my paper, went to the library, but the subject was so interesting, I'd get what I want, but I kept reading.
Yes.
And that took up time.
Yep.
I was one day late.
So. Yep.
But
I always try to tell my students, especially in this introductory class, some of you will be tempted to want to write a 10 to 15 page paper, and more power to you. But I would just advise you to look at how much this grade is worth in the class and whether the work that you're putting into it is worth the grade. It's not like I'm going to say, oh, you've written two papers. So you just You're adults. You figure it out.
Two, I enjoy these things because you are part of it. My last term in college, and I'm filling in.
Yeah.
So I filled in with philosophy. And I got there and I thought, my God, I just now found this course. You know, I really enjoyed that one. And we had a very small class. I think we sat in a room, maybe not much bigger than this room. And the thing I could never understand is one boy would go to sleep. Now, if you have 40, maybe you might skip one.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just really, I said, why, how come I didn't take that course?
Yeah.
That was Plato's it's famous. Republic.
Oh yeah, you told me about that, reading Plato. Yeah. Which for your later life was a great basis there.
It was a burden to think, because I learned that you have to deal with people that have different views than you have. But some of my friends, and I'm thinking of Vern Cook particularly, didn't make any difference. His view is his view, and screw it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So he wasn't burdened with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd still do what I need to do, but it was a tough deal for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, based on what we just said, before we go into the topics for today,
yes,
which are going to be your gubernatorial elections,
yes,
and then the people that you appointed, I really want to hear of that process and why you picked them and that kind of thing. So your last semester at U of O, your last term there, when did your dad die? Did your dad die and then you finished a term? Or no. Did you finish and then
died in July.
He died in July over the summer. So you didn't know it was your last term.
No.
As
my next door neighbor, he makes his own birthday cards. Not this year, but last year, he said, you've got time. That was my 90th birthday. So I wrote back to him, by golly, Harvey, you're right. I still have 3 eligibility quarters of football.
Exactly. I've
been accepted to the law school.
Yep.
And I have my Green Bay Packers contract I haven't signed yet. Yeah, I've got time.
Exactly. You have options.
Now, Dad had a heart problem. He knew it. Had it for some time. My brothers came home on leave prior to going overseas.
Right.
And my one brother said, well, why don't you get married while we're here? So then that's when I got married, which was lucky because my dad was there. We got married on the 5th of July, and he died on whatever, July 30 or 31st,
right,
the last day of July.
Yeah.
And so my brothers went, and that came back again. And he was cognizant when they came, but very shortly after he went in coma. And his brother from New York came, but Dad was still alive, but he didn't know about it. That's the story. That's what you want to do.
Sure. So, I mean, as I said, what I want to talk about is the 74, 78, 82 campaigns. And then while you're governor, the people that you appointed. And so Supreme Court justices, other justices, and then you had some other appointments in there. So let's start with the 74 campaign. Just so you know, it's a very important campaign for me. That's when my dad ran for county commissioner in Jackson County. So I know exactly where I was that night, going between the television stations in Jackson County.
Well, first of all, I'd never run anything other than county. with one exception, and that was that you ran for delegate to the convention.
Right.
And for whatever reason, I said, well, I'll enter the race, but that's all I did. Mm-hmm. And I start counting the people that voted me that certainly are going to do it, Hatfield and all of us. So Dolores and I were planning our vacation. Well, I won.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a non-campaign. Tom McCall had finished. I was a legislator, and I could see how, at least in my mind, he just sort of took the bucket and dumped it upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still so many things that had to or could be or should be done for even things that we did, land use planning or all these famous bills and all
right.
There's still tangled out there. And so it wasn't a matter of thinking who competition was. Tom finished. I'd been there 20 years, almost 20, not 20, 16 years. And I said to myself, I can do this job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I entered. At that point in time, Clay Myers had been Secretary of State, State Treasurer. Tom McCall loved him. Tom McCall was a giant. But I never paid any attention to that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Clay's in, I better stay out, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I was for quite some time what you call who's in the governor's race, Clay Myers and others. And I was another.
Right.
Dorchester just finished, and it was there for the first time I moved from others to Clay Myers and Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And others. And this is all a new experience altogether.
Yeah.
I did have the advantage of a couple who worked on my campaign who had been very active in it's an organization, the young people. I'll try to come up with it, but mm-hmm. anyway, national, but there's also local. And they had been active, so they knew people all around the state.
Oh, good.
And so now we're going around, selecting the chairman.
Right.
Mike Ragsdale was one of those, I'm speaking of, that. And he was on my campaign. Anyway, it was an organized young people thing.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I can remember it was down in Roseburg. They asked, who's with him? Yeah. They turned out to be among my best.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So that was an advantage. But it was interesting. I knew Clay was widely known. Also, as a general Republican, Clay was going to be our next nominee. Everybody presumed that.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew all that. And so now I took my first, what you call, downstate.
Right.
Left the barriers behind. And we got into Corvallis.
Mm-hmm.
An early morning breakfast. And so I showed up, and the room was full. And we had similar successes wherever we went. I came back and said to my staff, hey, I think I can win this.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly it came to me that it wasn't that Clay was well known. It's how they knew him.
Ah.
And so I think that this was a reluctant Republican party that,
mm-hmm.
okay, we'll vote for Clay. But they weren't really, didn't have somebody they got excited about.
Right.
So that's right. That's how I fit in. I began to start moving around again. Lucky for me, I like people. I enjoyed being with people. I had one man, he was my Air Force general. What he knew, he was a pilot and knew a lot of pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I need to go somewhere, he'd call, hey, Charlie, you going to wherever?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an easy thing. As a matter of fact, I got over to Hermiston, and I needed to be a sort of a glitch in my schedule back in the valley and then back to the campaign. But that was the next game. And Ed Patterson, who was the legislator and supporting Clay,
mm-hmm.
and I said, Ed, I need a plane ride. Let me see what I can do. So I got this fellow, and he said, Ed said, I have a friend that's running for office for governor. I need a plane ride. He said, it isn't Clay Myers, is it? No. So he didn't care who it was.
One was a play.
And we got the buddies. He was in an interesting business. He, what they call it, you know, companies that give pencils.
Mm-hmm.
That was his business. And mm-hmm. he said he had one car and 15 clunks. In other words, he'd fly to that place and take that car.
Right.
And that was the business he was in. Yeah, as a matter of fact, he played a large part after the primary, and one of my famous stories, famous, funny to me. We had a breakfast, and it was a U-shaped table, and about this size wide, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of what you call a local restaurant or within a
mm-hmm.
place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm, and his wife was sitting opposite me, we're talking. I get up, give my spiel, and then they come to questions. And my pilot says, Vic, well, what? Your fly's open. What? Where do you go?
Exactly.
Just turn around, zip, and come mm-hmm. back like it never happened. I rarely tell that story, but I wasn't embarrassed. I kind of laughed a lot.
Yeah.
Jamie?
Yeah.
Is Vic here?
They told me I needed a driver. I said, what do you mean I need a driver?
Mm-hmm.
We're in a primary now.
Mm-hmm.
I've driven all my life. No, you need a driver. Then I won, and of course now you really do need
right.
a driver.
Right.
And they said you have to write a speech because the media wants to see what you said.
Yep.
I said I can't write speeches, and I surely can't deliver a written speech. No, you have to do that. And you understand, but I had notes and I'd been in the legislature.
Mm. Yeah.
It was just easy just to do that. I do remember a nice sunny Sunday, and I went down and wrote this speech. And the speech to some group, and I don't remember what, but it's at the Multnomah Club, I remember that. My staff went. When it was all over, they said to me, "By golly, you're right. You can't write one and you can't deliver." That, of course, that cured as you moved along.
Yeah.
I never was charismatic. You know me, so you've got your own vision of who Booker T is. That's one of the beauties of what we're talking about, you and me. Because I'm talking about from my view, and you're listening to what I'm saying, but whatever. And the fascinating part of our school, I don't know, I remember his name. Your professor's retired. He was the one.
Oh, Russ Tondero?
Yeah. And I think he was a pretty good Democrat, solid.
He's very solid and Democrat.
We got to be real buddies.
Yeah.
I mean, really, we just enjoyed each other. And well, anyway, maybe it's hard to tell how come. And I started thinking, because I've been interviewed, how come? Sometimes I don't know how come. I was never concerned about large groups. I was never worried about I'm going to screw up or say something wrong. I was relaxed to that extent. And jumping ahead, I mean, really ahead the second time around, and Bob Straub and Pat in August, they were going to get a trailer and go see the people. And my reaction then was, my God, it's August. Where were you seeing the people before? Anyway, he started in Southern Oregon. He worked his way up north. And he got to Bandon. Oh, God, Bandon is great. This cheese is wonderful. It's our favorite. Pat and I really love this cheese. And he's heading toward Tillamook.
And this is way before Tillamook bought out Bandon.
Anyway, that kind of thing never occurred. I'm trying to think. Maybe you can ask a question.
Well, let's go to your first primary against Clay Myers there.
Yeah.
So what did you have for staff?
I had I can't say a campaign manager. I had a person that had never done anything like that before. A woman, but she had a business and was well organized. I think she was all right. I really didn't have a finance chairman, but I had several people that I knew and were able to go get some money. I mentioned earlier Mike Ragsdale, who's working for volunteers and getting me volunteers. Then a secretary, I guess. It was a small thing.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, we needed it. And it worked extremely, they all worked extremely well.
So then you beat Myers, and so does the Republican Party swing in and say you need more professional campaign, like a driver? Or is that
my campaign?
Or is that Mark Hatfield takes you aside and says, "Oh, by the way," I mean, how did that more professionalization happen there?
Well, first of all, in terms of driving, there was no time for argument.
Yeah,
you do need.
Yeah,
and let's not argue about that. And the speech business, you do need to run a speech. It's a surprise. Punch Green. Hey. I'm sure you've heard of Punch.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yep. He came in and asked me the same question you asked. Who's your campaign? Well, I don't have a campaign manager, but I have And how about your finance chair? I don't have a finance chairman. How about Pelosi? I don't have one, but I've got this guy that's kind of hurt. And then he says to me, you can't win. But it came down to my early statement that I told you. Yeah, they knew Clay, but it wasn't that they, it was how they knew him.
Right.
And I didn't know, I didn't recognize that.
Yeah.
Because that was not the field I'd been played in.
Yeah.
And his problem, I would tell you, was that he wanted it too badly.
Mm-hmm.
And presumed he was going to win. Now, those two things are, they're the poison.
Yeah.
If you think you're going to win, you're going to lose. It just, you know, it just, I'm going to make it. It happened with Tom, I think, to a great extent, it's a 2 year, 4 year.
Yeah, year. The 78 race.
And he just figured he'd come on the stage and say da-da, and that would be all there was to it. And so Beckett shows up, untainted. I mean, I had, I've been there, but I was always a minority member, so media didn't pay much attention to the chairman of the committee or that sort of thing. And so I did amendments and things. I worked, and the only place I could really work to a good extent was in the committee. That's what's on the floor. It's on
the floor.
And so I won, and people knew who I was, and I was a Republican leader. You certainly must have a picture of that.
Oh, yes, yeah. No, this is the famous phone booth. I had lunch yesterday with Phil Kiesling, who said to say hi.
Yeah.
And he was an intern in the 75 session.
Huh.
So that's when you were 7 instead of 6.
Yep.
And he remembers this picture very much. That's great.
Well, the thing is, at the time, of course, it took time to come up with it, but he was... treasurer, chief justice of the Supreme Court, congressman, governor, out of 6.
Yeah.
And that's incredible to think about. That's George Wingard and Ken.
Yeah. And I think that phone booth is still there.
Huh?
I think that phone booth is still there.
Oh.
This phone booth? Is this the phone booth that's in the Capitol building?
It could be. I don't get there anymore.
Yeah, no, I think it's
back,
I think,
it's the back of the room.
Yeah, I think it's still there with nothing in it because no one makes phone calls there anymore. But you can close the doors and you can talk on your cell phone and people can't really hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, actually, I have a pin I had made after the election. 2 years later, where we got up to 7, and it has Roman numeral 7, just a little dot thing, and there's only 6 of them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But again, we did our work. These were bright people, and they did their work, not with anything against Democrats. But they did their good work in committee and made some bills that were crummy better, and some that were couldn't even make better.
Right.
Didn't make come out of the floor.
Yeah.
So whatever power we had was in the committee.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it worked out well.
So if you beat Clay Myers, so talk to me about the 74 campaign in the general.
The first word was the next day. Attia, the conservative, beat Clay Myers, the moderate. I remember that. I thought, oh shit. You know, that's the way it came out.
Yeah.
And as years go along, and I think I told you before another reason, that I will openly admit I'm a fiscal conservative, but certainly not a conservative in terms of human relations.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be really on the other side of the issue.
Yeah.
But that's beside the point. So that was the first twinge I got.
Yeah.
And that was the day after. And you post it and you say, that's big news, and that's going to stick. You know, if it happened somewhere in the middle of the campaign, it wouldn't have made much difference that day. And I just started a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We had, now we got professionals, meaning we paid people.
Mm-hmm.
We did keep, of course, let's call it the campaign manager.
Yeah.
She wasn't. And we did formalize our office, got a little bit bigger, ready, got, of course, we had raised money.
Mm-hmm.
That campaign, there was a limit passed by the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was unconstitutional, but it was the law.
Right.
And as you know, that's what the Supreme Court said, that's unconstitutional.
Yeah.
But that's what both Bob and I were under that.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, if I remember correctly, or Frankie, it was something like $75,000.
Yeah, $75,000, $85,000. It wasn't very much. Yeah.
So that again would be his advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I didn't think about that. That's what we had. Let's go do it. And so we started campaigning. Whatever my message was, seemed to ring well where I went. Bob, unfortunately, had made bad choices. By that I mean in terms of what we call a palace guard.
Mm-hmm.
And they just guarded him too much.
Mm-hmm.
They hovered over him. And I really believe, because I think Bob was a hell of a neat guy, a great sense of humor, you know, and really dedicated. If they let Bob be Bob, it'd have been tougher to beat.
Yeah.
But his palace guard wouldn't turn him loose. As a matter of fact, I just could tell that I always did like Bob, but I know, but I could tell that he'd run to me tonight, here again. I think there was a bit of, well, we can't lose. I've run twice for my office, and maybe four campaigns, and twice for governor. And so I got a lot of people out there, and there may have been a little comments. Mm-hmm. More in his palace guard than with him. And, but I just kept going. I knew, two or three weeks before the general, that I wasn't going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't tell anybody, I didn't look sad or anything. Mm-hmm. And here you know.
So is this just based on your feeling, having been in so many elections?
Yeah.
It's not like you had polling or anything?
No.
So.
And so I knew that's going to happen. I was not surprised. I think most candidates and with me, I felt bad for my volunteers that they were so enthusiastic and they worked so hard and I let them down.
Mm-hmm.
But still, for a first timer and 45, 55, Nixon resigned, Ford pardoned him. That wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
When it was all over with, incidentally, I tell that the next morning I could drive anywhere I wanted. But I said, after I rested, I might run again, but I'll only do that if I think I can beat Bob.
Right.
I'm not going to do this just for the fun of it. And he made his chief of staff, it wasn't Bergstein, it was someone. Anyway, I said, oops, that's his first mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to remember who it is. But anyway, again, he had his problems and there were some issues and taxes and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the first campaign, Bob Chandler and the newspaper, Vic, he said, was it worth it? This is 2 weeks before the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you know. I don't know. I mean, whether you win or lose, of course, I already knew.
Mm-hmm.
So about a month later, I called and said, yeah, you don't run or lose, but yeah, it was a tremendous experience. And anyway, I went back to being a senator.
Yeah.
And
before we switch to the 78 campaign, I've been reading the 75 and 77 legislative session tapes. Do you have a sense that your position as senator or your perception of issues in Oregon changed because of your statewide campaign? I mean, the personalities didn't really change. I mean, basically, here's your caucus right here. But you're now, you know Hermiston. You've eaten their watermelon. You've been to Malheur County. You spent time in Medford. Did that change your perception of how your job was in the Senate?
I'm almost going to put it as a question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said to myself, having lost to Bob,
mm-hmm.
I know that I am where Oregon is.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do a good job of conveying it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this other Nixon Ford
and
first timer and all of us. But so I'm saying, whatever it was, and I didn't define it in my mind,
mm-hmm.
that I was where Oregonians were. And so, in answering your question, I didn't change at all. The problems that we had at the time basically were not the big ones that you know about, but managing the big ones.
Right.
And we had instances, I'll give you, and this was a nursing home in Bend,
mm-hmm.
and they had one of the department people come and tell me, you should do this and this. And about a month later, another one came in and said, you should do this and this. Same department,
mm-hmm.
and they were confusing.
Right.
That kind of
yeah.
thing. That was right. And I said that. So I didn't change my view of how things, but I couldn't. As a legislator, you can't really. That's management.
Right. Right.
And you can't pass a bill and say two people can't go to the nursing home.
Exactly.
So I just moved forward. I didn't change. My attitude was, I'm going to vote how I felt. I wasn't going to run again for governor,
mm-hmm.
until later on. Mm-hmm. I made my mind up. I wasn't going to do that. And I'm just going to be the senator that I've been before and try to square things away. So fundamentally, the first answer was I knew I was for Oregon or by having traveled. But then that's where Democrat and Nixon for that's where all that comes to play.
The 74 Watergate babies and all that is a complex
that's
election.
That's right. I had a chance to talk to Ford several times. I admire him very much, and I think he was a great president. And I told him he made the right decision. Politically, it was a crummy decision, but he made the right decision. And I've told him that because all the congressmen and senators have always had the right color tie on, and they're always in, they weren't paying attention to what needed to be done in the country. So the clearing of Nixon with Ford there, and it just there's no point talking about it anymore. The game's over now, so let's better go to work. And maybe 2 weeks or so. Let's see, and 2 or 3 weeks. Got an invitation from Ford to come to the White House, and the invitation came to come and do whatever. They picked about 4 or 5 of us that thought might win.
Right.
And do whatever you think you want to do. We'll film it, and then you can use it or not. That's the way it came.
Yeah.
My first reaction was, hell, there's no votes in Washington, D.C. And then I got to thinking, I may never get the chance to get over there.
Exactly.
And the incredible thing, Jim, I had a friend who had a jet, and anyway, we left at 5 o'clock in the morning from Portland, flew to Washington, D.C., got there early, visited Wendell, and then went to the White House, was briefed, but then Ford came in for more briefing, then went to the Oval Office, did my thing, went back out, got a taxi, back to the jet. At 9 o'clock, I was at the Happy Canyon pageant. I said, my God, what did I just do? And the follow-up on that was Dolores said, is that office really open? And my answer was, God, I don't know. But I know what the rug looks like. And then that, in fact, was the case.
Perfect.
And that I remember. It was an incredible thing in the world. But there wasn't much you could stem the tide. It was tough all up and down the country. I remember we lost Lynn Newberry.
A
good man.
Yeah.
Done well.
Yeah.
Although his successor matured and finally worked out real well, but he had to start at the bottom. Lynn was there.
Yeah.
But Lynn was a good example of the kinds of things that took place.
Yeah.
That's just the way it goes.
Yeah. The next time we had an election like that was 2006. People tired over the Iraq War.
Yeah.
And you know, it went down that low, so state legislators were losing because of national issues. So it's a very remarkable election. So, 78. So at what point do you decide, you know, Bob Straub hasn't done things well, and I do need to get into this?
Excuse me. I knew there was a point in time, but it was within a year. It was, in other words, it wasn't the next year or the year after that. And at that point in time, with issues that we were dealing with, and the one that really was probably difficult for me was this the tax bill, that, for me to deal with, I knew about it. But Bob had, of course, that was his deal with it, but Bob had other things happen that he had to deal with. So anyway, I decided, I think I've got a chance, and I think I can win this. And I'm going to guess at least a year, maybe a little more than a year. And yes, it was, because maybe a couple of months after that, we announced we're going to run again. So that was, and by now, of course, I'm more mature. I've run statewide. We don't have to spend a lot of time on the volunteer side. I had a volunteer chairman, absolutely incredibly good. There was a woman, she was active in Washington County, and Oregonian writer, I'll think of his name, he wrote about campaigns. Anyway, he came to my office and said, I was there. Okay, everybody says they got a lot of volunteers. Show me your volunteers. And we, and she just pointed, there's the file. So he goes over there and he picks out at random, I don't know, some, several, whatever. Came back and said, my God, you have volunteers. And we really did. We had good, solid, just not names, really solid volunteers. So our initial thought, once we now we're started, Bob's going to run. Well, that was presumed, and he did. We read that he was going to get this big shot from Washington or New York, I've forgotten. There was an advisor to campaigns. But we knew also that he sells his campaigns via media. That was his style. So we knew that part of it. We said to ourselves, okay, Bob's governor, we'll try to raise as much as we can, but expect him to be getting the money. And we'll beat him, we'll beat him with our volunteers. And basically, just a second.
There's somebody heading there.
Basically, that's in a very large manner. That's the way it happened. And our army of volunteers helped a lot. But in my first run at 45%, I'd made a lot of friends. And people now knew me. I obviously only started 45, but you've got a much more solid base. You don't know where it is, but it's there. One major issue we had was to make sure we get as many Republicans to vote for us. And so it was a separate, but now we had professional people. Had consultants, both actually, the first campaign and the second. And God, he was a bright guy. He'd get one line out, and before he'd write it, he's got another line, and I hadn't written the first one. Paul Newman, and he says, I'm the real Paul Newman. And he even said, Becky said, you're a hokey. But maybe this is the year for hokey, he says. But so we had a good advisor, Paul, and a good team of people. Now, I told you I knew I was going to lose in the first campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We had a massive poll and then tracked it from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 3 weeks ahead of my poll.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And when I drove up that night and waiting for the first announcement, Straub Worley 55 at TA 45 or something.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not right. That's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't alarmed.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So here again, gut reaction has been very good for me.
Yeah.
It's been very useful and largely correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
What it is, I can't tell you yet.
Yeah. That's good to have. Not, I mean, when you're saying that, I keep thinking of the Mitt Romney campaign, where apparently they were totally mystified that they lost. And the numbers never added up for them. And I just was wondering, does anybody have a gut feeling in this campaign, or is a gut feeling and is willing to talk about it? It's just fascinating to...
I don't know how many do. I really don't know.
Uh-huh.
I would say back there, there's so many experts,
mm-hmm.
quote,
mm-hmm.
and they all know, and they can all confuse the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
When we have a candidate running for Congress or
right.
whatever, and they have an advisor, I say, where's the advisor coming from?
Yeah.
And come from Washington, forget it. You got to get an advisor here. But even, you know, on major issues or major things, having,
mm-hmm.
I just had a gut feeling about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And that, and I feel, and as I say, basically, it's proven to be very largely correct.
Yeah.
When yeah. it comes to writing.
So let's talk about that primary, 1978. You come in, you have been the successful nominee 4 years earlier. You lose to Straub. You come in again, and you're the underdog again. So talk to me about that campaign with Roger Martin and Tom McCall.
First of all, I've said, if we could have written a script and say, Roger, you say this, and Tom, you say that, they couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have done it better. We made the presumptions that it would be, as the people soon discovered, about Tom and Roger.
Mm-hmm.
There was a meeting. Actually, we had a meeting whether Vicatia or Roger should get out of the race.
Mm-hmm.
I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, this group, which are trumpeters mainly,
mm-hmm.
figured that Vicatia ought to get out.
Mm-hmm.
My answer was, why should I get out? I'm going to win. That's my answer to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that Roger was going to be third, no matter how it ended.
Mm-hmm.
Roger was a good candidate, good guy, but boy, and he had, when he really, they had three debates.
Mm-hmm.
The third one was Mitford, and next one, the dogs all came out, you know, and I'm smiling, thinking, isn't this wonderful? But here again, these are all things that I'm sure you know as well as I do. Tom was much too confident.
Mm-hmm.
he was really, really pissed off. I mean, really pissed off when he lost. That mopped up well. That was enough to tell you. I kept waiting for, it was clear I was going to win. And I kept waiting for a phone call. Roger was great. He came over to my, and was very upbeat about it. And I kept waiting for a from Tom. Mark Hatfield called to congratulate me. I told him, what should I do? Well, he didn't have any more answer than I did. Finally, I just said, I'm going to go down to the hits, which I did. Unfortunately, he was in the lobby, and the media was all around him, and I showed up. He was quite petulant, and they got that on there, but he was a loser, and so that was not the... We went back to his room, and there he just tore up his campaign manager, a nice, really nice woman. I knew her. She was in tears, a couple others. I wasn't, because I know Tom, and I knew that's who Tom was. I just take it as it was. But, I mean, he was really pissed off. And the margin was unexpectedly large. They're already going to call me 10 days before the election. It's a Saturday anyway, And they'd just taken a poll, and Tom was something like 38, and I was 31 or 32. And my comment, I said, I won. There was a pause at the end. Because Tom was so high, he couldn't move higher. So all that could happen is he could come down. The point was, can he come down fast enough for me to catch him? These are all the things we were dealing with. So when I saw it like that, sliding like it did, there's no question what was going on. It was fascinating with the media. The media figured that the big show was the Benson Hotel at the Tom Hall. And we were at the hotel up the street. It's up near that, the ball field. But anyway, that was mine. But anyway, the medium media was at the Benson, number one team. They could see it, and they were scrambling to get where the real news was. And I was smiling about that. Anyway, we had this poll, and I saw the poll on election day. And I said, Denny, I'm 3 weeks ahead of your poll. And that's... So, I don't know, I look back now and I think to myself, I'm just a regular retail merchant. My dad had the store, us kids worked harder, I mean, manually. We had the store. And here I am, this small retail store, and I become a governor of Oregon, which it's even hard for you to get a hold of. For me to do that. And yet, that's one of the marvels of America, I guess. It's been quite a history.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to look back on that time and compare it to now. If you were a candidate now, we would have lots of things about your life story. They'd have pictures of a broom or you cleaning rugs or something,
yeah,
working his way up by his bootstraps.
Yeah.
And in 78, that kind of stuff didn't exist. It was just beginning to come in, but it was at the presidential level. They were kind of beginning to do it. And, you know, you were elected. I was in college. My dad was actually defeated in that primary.
Oh.
Jimmy Carter took away federal funding for abortion. And so he and the other two county commissioners in Jackson County said, well, we'll pay for it. And so he was defeated in the Republican primary. But just watching that election, you know, from the rest of the state, and I was voting absentee in California, we didn't know Atiyah Brothers. It did, you know, your all the retail stuff. We didn't know any of that. It was just who the candidates were. And so, but that wouldn't, no consultant would let you get away with that now. By gosh, they'd have a hard scrabble bringing up and, you know, working hard and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. And it would be a great story.
Well, yeah, that's, it's hard for me to say. I ran ads, but that ad had to, we weren't going to phony it up.
And
I see ads today, R's and D's, and they're really phoning the thing up, and that kind of gets to me. But
it's amazing how many people have kids and a dog.
Yeah, that is. And, you know, that's the bad part of it. If I were to run today, being younger, of course, I think I have a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think I have a chance to win is so much of the campaigns are not very friendly. Why I say friendly? They're not warm. They're not.
Right.
That's who I am.
Yeah.
And if they ask me a question about abortion or gay marriages and stuff, I answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say, well, I'm thinking about it or
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And honesty and integrity, I believe, is so important to people. And we haven't had really somebody who can say, has that.
Yeah.
And I believe that, you know, I say, how come, Vic, you did all this? And I say, well, people would put more store in honesty, directness. And I may disagree with them, but being that way is more important than the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I felt about it.
Yeah.
That not the issue, but the person.
Mm-hmm.
And You don't think that, you either feel that way or you don't feel that way. Let's go back to legislative races. I knew some of the legislators, they would go campaigning, and today I'm here and I'm this, and tomorrow I'm here and this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they win. Now comes the time to vote. Now, who am I? You know, which one of these are me.
Right.
And I'm a little embarrassed to tell you what I tell you, but I believe that. I think candidates, they come and say, you want some advice. Be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose, you lose. Mm-hmm. The sun's going to come up the next day.
Yeah.
Just be who you are.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lack of that. And that's why I say, okay, maybe I'd have a shot at it.
Yeah. It's amazing because I talk to candidates. I'll talk to any candidate at any time. But the second meeting, I charge my professional rates.
Yes.
And so the first question I always ask them is, do your politics match your district?
Yeah.
And the number of people who have not thought about that. It's like, you know, if you're a Republican in Portland, so have a good campaign, but you're not going to win. So, number one. And then number two, it's like, so do you, you know, you have an issue. Everybody has an issue that gets them in. Is that going to be enough to keep you interested? And are you willing to learn? Can you learn? And show me evidence of that. So be yourself, but be open to things. And it's amazing the number of candidates who don't take that second step.
I know that. And politics, certainly statewide. Any large city, it's hard to become identified.
Mm-hmm.
Portland being number one. I could come into Portland and media wouldn't even know it.
Right.
I would come into Ontario and the whole damn town would know it.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of a situation. And those are the things that you deal with. I don't know if there's the only formula that I know of is that who are you? They want to know who you are,
mm-hmm.
and you just be who you are,
right.
Win or lose.
Yeah,
don't
give the people a real choice. Don't try to coddle up to the people.
That would, of course, force the opponent to be who he or she was.
Yeah, exactly.
A surprising one to me is this doctor.
Yeah, Monica Wiebe.
I don't know. Some say she's going to lose anyway. I don't know what the polls say.
Uh-huh.
But she's bloomed out there. I talked to her very early on.
Uh-huh.
And she had not become public. But just and she was still quite overwrought about whether she did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
To tears.
Yeah.
And now she's candidate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. America, I worry about. I worry about it greatly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing what I was doing because I really believe this system needs to be protected, and we're getting weaker. I believe the guys that invented this said it, that, and I use the term, is if the people are strong, we get a strong country. If the
mm-hmm.
people have a weaker, I believe that. So it's a personal philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is hard, almost as hard as when I first ran here. You go out to coffees and you tell people how damn good you are.
Yeah.
and that's not easy.
But yeah.
The thing that saddens me is that it went downhill so quickly after I left.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it would happen that quick.
Mm-hmm.
And my successor was, of course, the major one to blame. He was, and forget his infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
He was Washington, D.C. Kind of guy.
Yeah.
He cleaned house, talked about my team of people as Deadwood.
Mm-hmm.
And God, that was so angered me because they were unlike anybody that had been there. And so then that became the pattern. And
yeah.
It's interesting now since, so we're, I really have really strong, good feelings about Ted
mm-hmm.
and Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And in that order, not
mm-hmm.
that I dislike Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
Ted is... we get along together real well.
Mm-hmm.
We could go camping together without any problem.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted did make some mistakes, but it was his first time.
Mm-hmm.
And plant closing was a major one.
Mm-hmm.
While we were trying to deal with it, there was a misunderstanding of how business works. Of course, obviously, I think I've already told you about my feelings on my successor, but now our current governor, I think, not as highly as I think of Barbara and Ted.
Mm-hmm.
Although Ted must have been shocked, and how the hell I won back in the middle of a recession is.
Oh, yeah.
What was that? Changing horses in the middle.
Exactly. Well, actually, before we shift to that 82 election, in the 78 election, some people who were very important came into your life. You appointed them, hired them. So people like Denny. So talk to me about finding Denny and deciding that he would be kind of a central person. Campaign, we'll talk about him later on. You know, in other interviews when we get to actual governor stuff, but.
Well, Denny came, he had, the Oregon State allowed him to take time to do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I was a senator, I was a Republican leader, and he came on as my assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And the session was over, and come up the next session, and he knew and decided that they were all telling me that Oregon State is just so generous. You know, you can't do that twice. You can do it one time.
Right.
And so he had to make a decision. Which it was a leap of faith. And we got along together wonderfully well. I would be a hard one to, you know, how come Atiyah is not getting more press?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Atiyah wasn't looking for more press, but he's the press guy, so he said, Denny, you're at fault for not getting Atiyah. whenever I repeat, just take it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, I'd get a shot taken at me. I wouldn't really mind it if it's just like, say, the media and it's a difference of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I take it. But when it's clear to me that they're really forcing themselves to come up with a shot at me,
mm-hmm.
that makes me upset. Denny would come in. Now, take it easy, relax. Now, these are the things that happen, just relax. And I'm not, of course, storming the office, but you can tell. One morning, he's standing in my door. God, he's so upset. Somebody took a shot at him. Denny, I said, now relax. Take it easy. That's the way things go. That's one of our favorite stories.
Uh-huh.
So, obviously, he rolled the dice, more important, because I had a rug business.
Mm-hmm.
But and it worked out well. He was, he was compatible. He's very meticulous on things and how they're supposed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And... it's just one of those things that worked out. I think he's happy with what choices he made.
Mm-hmm.
And we shifted him over to chairman, or campaign manager.
Mm-hmm.
He took leave. I don't really know why, maybe. I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But we did.
Mm-hmm.
That worked well. I'm anxious to talk about some of my people, staff, and certainly jury among them. But Denny, that is a good thing that came into his life and my life.
Mm-hmm.
Those things that just sort of happened. I don't know if this is really of any book, but my feeling was he and Holly, they were good people, but they were just sort of two different people in the same house.
Yeah.
And then they were happy.
Yeah.
She'd go her way, he went his way.
Yeah.
And I said, gee, how can they be that way? Well, they divorced very amicably, there was
mm-hmm.
no problem. And the tragedy, really, of his second wife, that was a tragic. It took
mm-hmm.
him a long time to deal with that. But he's happy now.
Yeah.
So.
Happy. I haven't talked to him in the last month or so, but he just moved into a new house. And so.
New house, that's
yeah.
right. Yeah. So he just seemed to be very happy, and she's retired.
Mm-hmm.
She is retired. She lived
mm-hmm.
within the last couple of weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
And
it's a good time to get out of the newspaper business, I think.
Yeah. So it's I'm trying to think to you if it didn't work. I would arrange to not have it continue.
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain that.
Mm-hmm.
And
I knew he was fake, but when I walked by it, I was still
and maybe
care, even though it's fake. The geese don't even
care. Yeah, maybe worth well off the record.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll talk about that when I finish.
Okay.
My first choice was Jerry Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And she's working at OPS and had a program and she was in the middle of it and whatever. She
mm-hmm.
turned me down. Anyway, I went and had to listen. Finally got Lee Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Bright man. And very strong man. Drove me nuts. And I would go into his office and, God damn it, Lee, I'm the governor, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I never had the certainty that my agenda was his agenda. And finally, I got Jack Frost to say, can you get him to resign?
Mm-hmm.
Which he did do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, and although that's probably the only major thing that ever happened,
mm-hmm.
If I couldn't work with somebody, I couldn't. I know myself, this ain't going to get better.
Yeah.
Let's stop it now. Now what I just said was not worthy enough, and he's off the record.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an important part,
mm-hmm.
but it may be a symptom of if I had to.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't deal with anything except my top level people.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So let's shift. We've been here talking for a long time now. Let's shift and finish up with the 82 campaign.
Yes.
And then I'll come back another time and we'll talk about Supreme Court justices and all that kind of stuff. So, 82. Is it a sure thing in 79 when you're sworn in that you're going to run again? Or does that, it gels over time and you say, I should do this again?
It took my staff a long time to believe. Never, starting with my house race, did I ever commit to run again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was determined to keep it that way.
Mm-hmm.
My decisions will be based on whether I think it's good or bad, not whether I'm going to win or lose.
Right.
And so it took myself quite a while to really believe I meant it.
Mm-hmm.
But then things were working. How am I going to say this? We had our recession.
Mm-hmm.
But things were coming together. The legislature and I were pretty much in sync.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I should continue on the program that we were on. So I decided to go. something. There was no gap of time. And that was the time for no gap of time, because things were coming too fast. Governor, we're going to come up short, $300 million. Or,
right.
And pretty much governor, we're going to come up short. So we didn't have time to learn.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure it's said. Ted was their candidate. He was in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure in their caucus, they were figuring out some way they could screw me. I'm sure there was some talk of it. But they also were, and I gave them public credit already,
mm-hmm.
that, no, this is too important. We're not going to let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean we always agree. But
right.
we weren't agreed on the basis
right.
of whether Ted or I were wrong against each other, but the issues are. So I, to their credit, they worked with the Republican governor, where their guy was sitting with them running for election.
Yeah.
And he was a good candidate. Yeah, he's good looking.
Yeah.
And speaks real well.
Mm-hmm.
And but I credit them. But anyway, I decided the things that I wanted to get done, I hadn't yet finished.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get land use planning done, finished.
Right.
We never did, and there's a quote in my oral history where I said, if you don't do something, legislature.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to call you back a special session. The property taxes,
mm-hmm.
that was still grinding.
Oh, yeah.
Feeding Oregonians, try to get jobs. There were so many things that would need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I had already made good friends overseas as well as in California. So I had entree honestly, I am amazed that at having to win by 62% is just incredible at that period of time.
Yeah.
And that's where we come back to what I told you earlier about, I believe him. Maybe I don't agree with what he's doing, but I believe him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that helped.
Mm-hmm.
And so I also out-campaigned him. That amazed me. Because, you know, I'm running the government and then special sessions, and he was where I was as a state senator running for governor. But I actually physically out-campaigned him. By now my combative football experience, competitive.
Yeah,
I don't know what it was, but
well, it's one thing that I really noticed about Kulongoski, and Kitzhaber is kind of the same way as well. Kulongoski, in both of his subsequent runs for governor, was just not a very good campaigner. He goes to a town, and it's not like everybody in Ontario knows he's there. He goes to a town to go fly fishing with the editor of the paper, and maybe talk to the Elks.
Yeah.
And then he goes out and he disappears and he goes somewhere else. And it's like, no, yell, jump up and down.
Yeah.
And it's not him.
Yeah.
It's not him.
No.
And so it,
no,
you know, clearly, clearly in that, in your campaign where you outworked him, it's partly that, but partly it wasn't his personality. Later on, he was elected twice and he didn't ever have to change.
He's a good-looking candidate, speaks very well,
mm-hmm.
he's got a great sense of humor, he's very humble.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds strange for me to say, but I think he's quite a humble person.
Yeah.
And he's got all the elements. on one of the campaigns, Bob Straub. And Bob was going to go, I think he was going to go somewhere in Washington, but it related to an Oregon issue. And in Ontario, they invited, the media invited Straub and just to have an interview. And they wouldn't give him time. Said, well, we'll go out on the freeway, wherever you are. We won't hold you up. And he went right through town. I came the next day. This is the view of Bob Straub. And it was the sign. And I pointed to one, Idaho. And that ever happened. That shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Well, you always have 5 or 10 minutes. No
absolutely.
What. But, but I still, actually, they say 62. If you really, as I look at it, I understand our Republican candidate was another one like we had recently that was going to get drowned.
Yeah.
And that's where I got, I was, he was a little bit harder, but he was a non-candidate candidate. I would, I said, people say, did you enjoy it, being governor? Well, I almost apologize by saying, yes, because we had a tough time. And I knew people were suffering. And, but I was using all of my brain, not part of it, and that's kind of exciting.
Yeah,
doesn't happen much in life. And we had some damn good people, which we'll get to. Also, as urgent to them as it was to me to get things squared away. And so, to that extent, it was. We were able to feed people and used, we used senior centers that were all over the state. And so that that helped. People were still hungry. Lynn Newberg came to me at the end of 1 year and said, you must be doing something right. What? I haven't read any article in the newspaper showing people sleeping in cars or children, you know, the typical end of the year. Haven't seen any of that. And there wasn't. It just sort of happened, I don't know. But the thing is that people, we had, you know, weekly, and so they did have whatever news we could give. They had trust. They suffered. They said, well, Monty Pick will help us. I took two cuts, which is really cosmetic. What the hell? Yeah, I was getting 43,000 or something. Out of a $600 million. But the point was that I truly did. I took, they're taking a cut. And the thing that I had really trouble, and that's really deal with the union, the state employees could have each taken a small cut. And we could have kept everybody. But no. I want my money. And that means that in order to give you your money, we're, the pot's only this big, some of the people have to go. And I said, geez, God, I think they'd be willing to give a little of it.
I think there's, as we've been talking here, there's two ideas for big projects that I've had for a long time. One of them is that. My grandparents moved here in the early 30s, very early 30s, and we're Oregon State. And they were here with things I'm going to want to talk to you also about. There's public power, private power, all that kind of stuff. But the public employees basically decided to take pay cuts so everybody would stay employed during the Great Depression. And that changed. There's a post-World War II way of thinking that's not that way.
Yeah.
And I really want to explore that. And the second thing is when you were talking and saying that you felt in your 74 campaign, looking at it, that you were where Oregonians were. I've had a hypothesis that Oregon's been a Republican state forever. It's just now the Republicans have kind of moved over here, and when you look at it, John Kitzhaber acts an awful lot like a Republican from 40 years ago or something. But there's a reality of the people that is very hard to shift. The politicians may shift around it, but it's fundamentally there.
Jim,
so
yeah, you're right. I've said and believe that Oregonians majority are here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's this many Republicans and this many Democrats, but we're here.
Yeah.
And we all match up the same way. Now, these nuts over here and those nuts over there, you had your nuts, or Democrats had their nuts, and they sort of kind of stepped back. Our nuts are still there.
Mm-hmm.
Although at the last Dorchester, I think they did a little, I don't know if anybody paid attention to it, but there was this group of conservatives that had their own meeting. And so, in my view, they swept all the crap out. Because Dorchester's not a Republican event.
Yeah.
But Republicans go.
Yeah.
And then the beauty of it is that they issue no matter what, and they finish it, and there's no blood on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the Central Committee, they're just bloody knee-deep.
Oh, yeah.
And so Democrats miss an opportunity.
Yeah.
That's all right. But
yeah.
Yeah. I do believe the Oregonians, regardless of how they're registered, and maybe, you know, people would say, well, I voted for you. I said, look, if all the Republicans in Oregon voted for me, I still couldn't win.
Exactly.
I need you.
Exactly. Yep, and that's what I'm watching with Monica Wiebe and Jason Conger.
Pardon?
With the U.S. Senate race.
Yeah.
And also Dennis Richardson for the governor's race.
Yeah.
We had a great natural experiment 2 years ago because, remember, no Republicans ran for treasurer or for attorney general. And so we had the write-in campaign guys who, you know, they couldn't run campaigns at all. And so we know there's a natural 40% are going to vote for a Republican.
Yeah.
That's it. And so I'm waiting. So is Jason Conger or Monica Wiebe, can they be at 45? And if they're at 40, it's like, you know, you're just not moving out. And Dennis Richardson, same thing. Can he be more than 40%?
Yeah.
We've got a really nice, you know, pegged floor, and we'll just see what happens.
It's interesting field of life.
Yeah, yeah.
But you do some things. I remember standing on the corner of 6th and Alder with my good friend, dear friend, closest friend, and he's passed away. And on my first race, we didn't know beans from Buckshot.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just posed almost an academic question to each other. Should I be going and telling them all the things they want to hear and then do my good things when I get there?
Mm-hmm.
And of course we answered him.
Yeah.
And people said to me, are you a lawyer? No. all you need is a set of principles and common sense. 1958, and I look back, and that's the way I lived my lived my political life.
Yeah.
Just that way. Just
yeah.
And it's to me this is interesting. Again, I want to thank you. I feel so confident. I've been involved with two books, Barbara's and Bob Strong. Obviously, Bob, meaning I didn't help write it, but I'm involved with the mechanics and what they're trying to do. And Bob was a good one, but I still think there was a restraint that shouldn't have happened. I don't think really Bob, well, I don't know how to put it. It's a good book, but it's not a book. It'll stay in the region. And Barbara, she really played up the part, and she deservedly does, but the part she's played in terms of women. And that was good. But I'm looking at you, Jim, and that this is more than just a Picatia book. It's a Picatia during the Bob Gone and the recession.
Yeah.
And
the context is everything.
Yeah. And so.
And you don't even have to ask questions like he was a man of his time, because clearly the people thought he was a man of his time. But yeah, context is everything. Context is everything.
There's one true story and one that's not true. You probably you must have heard. I played in this celebrity golf tournament. You heard my story about that. Who did you get?
I'm a celebrity.
That was real. But I bulked it up a little. I came home and said to my wife, "Some man on the street said I was legendary." And that's nice. And you do keep your study.
Yeah.
I have some things if you would.
Okay, great.